For South Carolina Public Radio, I'm Bradley Fuller. Not long ago, I had the chance to speak with Dr. Scott Weiss, professor of music at the University of South Carolina. Scott conducts the USC Wind Ensemble and was recently appointed interim conductor of the university's symphony orchestra as well. He not only provided a preview of the 2017-2018 seasons for both ensembles, but also shared some interesting background information on many of the works that will be featured, from longtime favorites to recent compositions, and a few of his thoughts about teaching and conducting effectively. Scott, it's great to have you.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
First, congratulations on being appointed interim director of the USC Symphony Orchestra.
Thank you very much. I'm really excited about it.
You've conducted symphony orchestras before, but in your time at USC, you've mostly been at the helm of the wind ensemble. How does conducting a symphony orchestra compare to conducting a wind band? Is it a vastly different experience, or is it basically the same thing, just with strings thrown into the mix?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's pretty much the same thing. My teacher, Don Schleicher at the University of Illinois, who is the orchestra conductor there, but who had a background in wind ensembles like me, used to always say, conducting is conducting. There are some differences when I'm working with strings and winds than if it's just winds, but they're pretty minor, honestly. And it's an interesting thing. In our country, we sort of typecast people as conductors. Oh, well, this person's an opera conductor, and this person's an orchestra conductor, and this person's a wind ensemble conductor. And actually, in Europe, it's not really so. In Europe, the people that are conducting wind ensemble music are also conducting orchestral music, but we sort of have this thing where we sort of typecast people, which is sort of interesting. But really, there's not a whole lot of difference. I mean, there are some gestural things that you don't really want to give to strings that maybe you would give to winds, but the same thing goes true. Like, there are gestures that you would give towards brass players that you wouldn't give towards an oboe player, because the reaction to that gesture may not elicit the sound that you're really looking for.
Never look at the trombones, right?
And never look at it. It only encourages them. That's right.
Do you suppose that this difference between the European and American way came about somehow due to the marches of Sousa and maybe this longstanding band tradition here, or is there another explanation?
Yeah, I think that probably is a lot of it, frankly. You know, in our country, at the same time that Stravinsky was writing music for winds and Varese was writing music for winds and Holst was writing music for winds, we had marching bands and John Philip Sousa and Henry Fillmore. And so we sort of developed this band tradition, which developed almost separately from the European classical tradition, which has always included wind music. Mozart, Dvorak, Beethoven all wrote tremendous pieces just for winds. So I think you're right. There's a lot of it that's sort of entrenched in the American band tradition.
Could you provide a brief overview of the seasons, both of the USC Symphony Orchestra and the Wind Ensemble, for the 2017-2018 season?
Sure, I'd be happy to. The USC Symphony opens a concert with Shostakovich's Fifth Symphony, one of the great pieces, of course, in all of orchestral literature, written in 1937 at sort of the height of Stalinism, at a time when Shostakovich was literally fearing for his life. And it is one of the most powerful pieces we have in all of the orchestral repertoire, and a piece that has long been really near and dear to me. So super excited about opening the season with that, and then featuring our guest soloist, Zul Bailey, cellist, who I actually played in youth orchestra with when I was a kid. And so it'll be a little bit of a reunion of sorts. And Zul is joining us for that concert here on September the 28th, playing Michael Dougherty's new cello concerto called Tales of Hemingway, for which Zul actually just won the Best Classical Performance Grammy just this past year. It's in four movements, and each of the movements is based on a different Hemingway book. So there's a movement, The Big Two-Hearted River. There's a movement, For Whom the Bell Tolls, The Old Man and the Sea, and then the final movements, The Sun Also Rises. Really easy to listen to, features some really interesting techniques on cello, some extended techniques. I love listening to the piece, but I think it's also going to be fascinating to watch Zul play it. And the orchestral part's great. We move from there to a concert featuring music of Mozart and Beethoven. In October, the first half of the concert is the Mozart Sinfonia Concertante for violin and viola, which is a charming piece. It's the only piece like that that Mozart ever wrote. He wrote it when he was 23, and it's kind of considered his first real masterpiece. And that features two of our newest string faculty members, Ari Streisfeld playing violin and Dan Sweeney playing viola. And then the second half of the concert is Beethoven's Pastoral Symphony, his sixth symphony, just 45 minutes of pure joy. Great, great piece. And then we close the fall part of the season with the orchestra with a concert that we're calling Famous Last Words, two pieces that composers wrote right at the end of their lives. The first piece in the program is the Bartok Third Piano Concerto, which he was 17 bars away from finishing when he passed away in 1945. And his student and longtime friend finished it for him, but he literally was laying in a hospital bed in Manhattan trying to finish the concerto when he passed away. And it's a beautiful piece of music, and it's very unlike his first two concerti for piano in that it is extremely lyrical and just beautiful. His other pieces, his other concerti, I love, but they have an altogether different kind of character than the third. And it has a little bit of a local connection because he was inspired. He was convalescing prior to being back in New York City. He was convalescing in Asheville, North Carolina. And he was very taken by the birds that he heard around him. And he actually incorporated the bird songs from Asheville, North Carolina, into the symphony. And then the second half of the concert is the Pathetique Symphony of Tchaikovsky, which he wrote and then a week later was dead of cholera, presumably from drinking a glass of water that was tainted shortly after the concert. And suddenly it was the last thing that he ever heard of his own was the Pathetique Symphony. So that concert's called Famous Last Words, maybe a little bit of a morbid title, but neither piece comes across that way at all. The spring with the Symphony Orchestra features a concerto competition concert on February 1st, where we will feature the winners of our concerto aria competition. And then we'll have sort of fill out the program from there. And then a big event for our School of Music is the first weekend of March in 2018, when we will stage a full production of Bernstein's Mass, which was written for the opening of the Kennedy Center and is a theater piece for musicians, actors, and dancers. And it will involve opera at USC, the USC Wind Ensemble, the USC Symphony Orchestra, USC Dance. There's a children's choir, there's a regular choir, and there's a celebrant. That role will be performed by Kevin Vortman, who most recently did a performance of this with the Philadelphia Orchestra. Kevin's out of Seattle and will be joining us actually for a couple of weeks as we prepare to put on this monumental undertaking. I actually saw a sketch of the set yesterday, and it's going to be something else. This is a piece that, probably because of the scale of it, doesn't get performed very often. And when it does, people that know about the piece will hop on an airplane to fly to see that performance. And in deciding whether or not we were going to put this production on, I did some research and discovered that we're one of only a handful of universities that have ever taken this on. And so we're super excited about it. We're a little nervous about it, but just because of the scale of it. But it's going to be something really special. And this is a piece that I've actually admired from afar for, it was probably 1983, when I first became acquainted with this piece. So it's really exciting to be putting that on the first weekend of March in 2018. And then we will close the orchestra season with a performance of Mahler's First Symphony, which, again, is something that in Mahler has become now a staple of the major orchestras around the world. And for us to take on his monumental First Symphony is something that's also extremely exciting. And we're pairing that with the Nielsen Clarinet Concerto, which clarinet players just absolutely fall over themselves to play because it's just this great piece. It's devilishly difficult, but it's also really fun to play. And so the first half will be the Nielsen Concerto, and then the second half will be the Mahler Symphony. So that's the orchestra season sort of at a glance, if you will. The Wind Ensemble has also a busy year as well. We open our season with a pretty varied program, including a major serenade by Dvorak for just wind instruments that he wrote, which I absolutely adore. I love Dvorak's music. His symphonies, especially the 7th, 8th, 8th, and 9th, are near and dear to my heart, but the serenade holds up extremely well to those as well. Then on the second half of the program is actually some new music by a couple of America's leading female composers. Kristen Custer, who's on faculty at the University of Michigan, has written a piece called Lost Gulch Lookout, which is really, really exciting and interesting and a little gritty, but not difficult to listen to, I don't think. It's based on Lost Gulch Lookout in Colorado, where she grew up, and it's just very vivid in its sort of text painting. It's just a great piece, easy to listen to. And then we're going to play a piece by Cindy McTee called Soundings, also very interesting. It's actually about 20 years old, but it explores a lot of different textures and harmonies, and it's also, like I say, it's extremely interesting. And then we're going to close the program with a piece by Wagner, Elsa's Procession to the Cathedral from Lohengrin, which is actually, interestingly, the closest wind band piece that we have by Wagner, save one little funeral march he wrote for Weber. In the opera itself, this scene is all winds until the strings enter way towards the end of the scene and then almost imperceptibly. And so the wind ensembles have kind of stolen the piece, just said, hey, this is ours, because it's just a wonderful piece. Second concert is actually going to be conducted by my new colleague, Tanya Mitchell, who's joining us from Valdosta State University. And she's going to conduct a program in October with the USC Wind Ensemble that includes Mio's La Création du Monde, The Creation of the World. And it also includes Steve Bryant's new Concerto for Trombone, which is written for Joe Alessi in the New York Philharmonic and scored for solo trombone and orchestral winds. That features our newest faculty member, Michael Wilkinson. We're super excited to be featuring both of them, our two new faculty members, on that concert. And then we're doing something different. On November 14th, we're going to play a concert at the Richland Library, Maine, on Assembly Street, which has been totally renovated, and they've built a performance space onto the first level of the library. It's sort of this convertible space. It's going to allow us to feature the chamber ensembles from the USC One Ensemble. So there's going to be a percussion ensemble and a saxophone quartet and a tuba euphonium quartet and then a little wind dectet for 10 winds. As well, it will feature Dr. Rebecca Nagel playing oboe. She's our oboe professor, and she's actually going to play also a concerto by Michael Daugherty called Firecracker for solo oboe and mixed ensemble. It's like bass clarinet and flute and violin and cello. And it's a really fun, interesting, highly virtuosic piece. But that concert will be very small ensemble. Some of them will be conducted and some of them won't be. And I think it's going to be a very fun concert to come to. In the spring, the Wind Ensemble will play for the USC Band Clinic, as we always do in February, which attracts hundreds of kids from throughout the Southeast, but we also open up the Coger Center to the general audience to hear that concert as well. The USC Wind Ensemble is participating in the performance of Mass. They will actually be the wind section for the Bernstein's Mass, which, interestingly, Bernstein wrote that piece for two orchestras. There's a string orchestra in the pit, and then he calls for a wind ensemble on stage. So it sort of works out perfectly. I don't think we're going to be able to get them all on stage. So I think they're all going to be in the pit, which is how most performances are done. But and then we close our season in April with several world premieres, including a piece by David Garner, who's on our composition faculty here at USC, as well as a new saxophone concerto by Stacey Garup featuring Cliff Lehman.
Sounds like some really well-known pieces by, you know, the European composers in the heart of the classical and romantic, as well as more recent works, as well as a variety of collaborations, not just with the library, but with other ensembles. And really just sounds like something for everyone between the two seasons of these ensembles.
Well, that certainly was the plan.
More broadly speaking, when you're either conducting an orchestra or wind ensemble or teaching a conducting class, what musical idea or even maybe life philosophy do you hope to communicate to these young people under you?
Well, I think one of the things that comes out in any performance is the passion behind it and getting past the notes and getting past doing things correctly and getting to the essence of what this music is saying, I think is really the key to all music making. With my conducting students in particular, but also with the students playing in my ensembles, what it takes to get to that point is an important part of the journey. In other words, getting beyond the bowings and the fingerings and the, you know, the correct rhythms and the correct intonation, but trying to understand what it was that the composer was trying to get at in that particular piece is such an important part of our music making. And you can hear that in a performance, even in a compact disc recording that you listen to, whether or not the musicians playing that really understand what it is that they're trying to communicate. And to me, I think this is the essence of what we do. I spend all of my time studying scores, trying to figure out what the composer was trying to communicate so that we can recreate that in a really deep and meaningful way. And so I really try to impress that upon our students. I try to bring them to that point of the Shostakovich Fifth Symphony, for instance, which we're opening our season with. I think it'd be very possible to play that piece and not really understand what Shostakovich was going through in 1937. He had to withdraw his Fourth Symphony because Stalin had just condemned his music, had called it muddle, and said that this music is not worthy of being played, it's not Soviet, and Shostakovich was literally fearing for his life. And so he writes this piece in which he calls it an artist's response to just criticism, but really he's thumbing his nose at Stalin. And to figure out how that's taking place in the music and how to communicate these ideas is a huge part of our musical journey.
Have you found, since you began conducting, that communicating some of these techniques towards getting a better understanding towards the context of the piece or something like that, that you've had to change your approach in doing that? Have students started to respond to kind of different incentives or teaching approaches, or has it been pretty consistent throughout your career?
That's a good question, actually. One of the things that I said to my students about a year ago is, it's important for me that you go seek the truth too. And one of the dangers, one of the pitfalls that I could fall into as a teacher is giving them all of the information instead of somehow facilitating their curiosity and their interest and passion to go find out the answers and dig deeply themselves. And one of the things that I'm always impressed by when you talk to members of the Berlin Philharmonic or the New York Philharmonic is their deep knowledge of the music that they're playing. And the conductor hasn't instilled that in them, hasn't given that knowledge to them for the most part. And they didn't necessarily get it all out of their music history classes as, music students. They've gotten the score and they've gotten books and they've read about this and that, and to somehow pique my students' interest enough that they would go figure out as much as they could about the Shostakovich Fifth Symphony or the Beethoven Sixth Symphony or any number of these wonderful pieces we're playing, I think is a real challenge for me, and it's something that I really, particularly recently, have become even more concerned about. Because if I'm relying only on what I give them, then we're going to run out of time. So,
Scott, thanks so much for sharing these insights, and all the best in the upcoming season and also in your engagements outside of USC.
Oh, thanks very much.
That was Dr. Scott Weiss, Sarah Bollock Smith Distinguished Professor of Music at the University of South Carolina and conductor of both the university's wind ensemble and its symphony orchestra. Scott spoke about the upcoming seasons for both performing groups and his outlook on conducting. For South Carolina Public Radio, I'm Bradley Fuller.